people wanting to be worshiping Him. And so we're just so thankful to see all of you here this morning. Just a real quick note, and I just wanted to give some of you just an update, because so many people have asked, and there's been a lot of information that Brooke and I haven't been able to share on our upcoming adoption. But this last week, we got a call, and they scheduled a C-section for November 3rd. And so Brooke and I will be flying out to Phoenix November 2nd, and Brooke will be staying indefinitely. It's just it's a long process with getting cleared from Alabama, getting cleared from Arizona, and the baby's actually part Native American, so we have to clear with the tribe as well. So Brooke will just be out there. It was kind of a scary thing buying her a one-way ticket and not knowing when she'll be back. I don't know who it's scarier for, her or me, but she'll be out there, and I'll be out there sometime and come back for the boys and maybe go back and forth a little bit. But just some people have asked for an update. That's as much as we know, and it's now less than a month away. And so thank you all for your prayers and everything to go along with that. Many of you know the name Arnold Palmer, and that's because he created a drink, half lemonade, half tea. But before he created a drink, the reason the drink took off, many of you know him as a golfer. Well, it was at the 1961 Masters Tournament where Arnold Palmer was one stroke ahead of everybody else. He was about ready to win the Masters, and on the last hole, he hit just an extraordinary shot that landed on the fairway. He was just a few strokes away from winning the Masters, which, if you're not a golf fan, Masters is one of the biggest competitions in the golfing world. So to win a Masters is the pinnacle of many golfers' career. And as he is walking down the fairway, getting ready to make his next shot, he sees an old friend over in the crowd that motions over to him. And so Arnold walks over to his friend, and his friend gets... Years later, Arnold Palmer would recount that story, and he would say, "That was the moment. That was the moment when I lost my focus." It turns out what happened on his next shot, he shot the ball into a sand trap, and trying to overcompensate for shooting the ball out of the sand trap, he shot the next ball over the green. He then had to, I think, two-putt the hole, and he lost the Masters by one stroke. And he says it all goes back to that one moment. And this is what he said. He quoted in a book years later, "You don't forget a mistake like that. You just learn from it and become determined that you will never do it again. And I haven't in the 30 years since." It brings up the idea of what we're going to talk about this morning. And that's the idea of focusing. The Hebrew writers, we'll read in just a minute, would say those words that you see at the top of the screen, "Fix your eyes on Jesus." But the term focus really just means that the center of interest, the center of a certain activity, and we focus on so many different things in our society. We have so many other words used to describe focus. We have a desire sometimes when we say we're focused on a desire, or there's just so many things in our society that are constantly pulling us and so many different directions. They're pulling our focus. And we know, and as we understand, because we're all good Bible students, and as we'll look at this morning, we know we're supposed to fix our eyes on Jesus and be focused on Jesus. But what is happening in our society is we are being told that we are allowed to, we've been given permission to, take our focus off of Jesus just a little bit and put it on all these other different things. And our society has done a good job of telling us to focus on all these other different things that we have in this life. That sometimes it's okay to put our commitment, that's another word we can use for focus, but sometimes it's okay to put our commitment to Christ on hold just for the time being while we focus on some other things. And I've heard countless stories and talked to several people throughout the last several years who have put their focus and their commitment to Christ on hold so that they can finish up school, or they can get ahead in their jobs, or they can focus on their family in a little bit, for a little bit. And it turns out that the more people you talk to, they say that their loyalties, in fact, Christians were surveyed, and more people said that their loyalties laid in ball games, schools, sports, homework, jobs, families, hobbies, and countless other things before their focus was on Christ. And it's a growing trend that more and more Christian families are putting their focus on all these other things, not bad things. And I want to make that point clear as we go through some things this morning. There's all these things we can put our focus on that aren't bad. But what has happened is people are now starting to admit that looking back, just like Arnold Palmer looking back, he didn't know when he lost his focus, but now that he looks back, he says it was that moment. And Christian families are now starting to look back over the last 5, 10, maybe 15 years saying, where did we go wrong? What's happened to our family? What's happened to my children? Whatever it is. And they look back and say, we lost focus somewhere along the way. And what Christian families are starting to realize is the time that they lost focus on Jesus was the time they started putting focus on other aspects of life that are not wrong to focus on. But when they become a higher focus than fixing our eyes on Jesus, that's when they started to veer off track. Too many people have taken a step back from their spiritual commitment and have allowed society and the things of this world to distract us with really the trivial and meaningless things. And what the Hebrew writer says in Hebrews chapter 12, starting in verse 1, says, therefore, we also, since we are surrounded by so great a cloud of witnesses, let us lay aside every weight and the sin which so easily ensnares us, and let us run with endurance the race that is set before us. Looking unto Jesus, the author and finisher of our faith, who for the joy that was set before him endured the cross, despising the shame, and has sat down at the right hand of the throne of God. I want us just to think about something for a moment. How do we, as those verses tell us, how do we lay aside the sin that so easily ensnares us? How do we run our race with endurance? How do we fix our eyes on Jesus? The simple answer that we give many times just to certain problems is just we need to focus more. We need to fix our eyes on Jesus. And we go to Hebrews chapter 12, verses 1 and 2, and we say, if you can do those things, if you could lay aside the sin, if you could start running with endurance and fix your eyes on Jesus, you're going to be okay. And then what we do is we just never tell anybody how to do those things. And so my question is, how do we block out the world, fix our eyes on Jesus, lay aside that sin that so easily ensnares us? And the Hebrew writer tells us exactly how. And it's those words that appear on the screen right there at the top of the screen. It says, therefore, we also, since we are surrounded by so great a cloud of witnesses. Now, I've taught this here before, but if you're new here or just have never paid attention, which is highly likely when I get up here because I don't like to listen to me sometimes, but I've taught this here before. When we typically teach those verses and we look at what a great cloud of witnesses is, this is how it's typically taught. It's typically taught that we are here running our race, because that's what the next verse says, let us run our race with endurance. And so we get this nice mental image, this nice mental picture of this big Colosseum. Like, I heard this taught one time, like, we're at the Olympics, and everyone's in the crowd. We're running the race, and all our witnesses are they're in the crowd. They're watching us, cheering us on. And they're saying, go, Kevin, go. You know, and they're cheering us on because they want us to run our race with endurance and not sin. And they want us to be successful and fix our eyes on Jesus. And so we take that spiritually and we say, well, we got all those people that have gone on before us, that are up in heaven. They're our witnesses and they're looking down from heaven on us. And they're saying, you can do this. Go, yay. They're our cheerleaders. Those are our witnesses. That's not what the Hebrew writer is saying at all. In fact, the idea of a witness is not someone who's cheering you on. It's not a cheerleader, but the idea of a witness, the idea of that very word is an eyewitness or one who can give testimony. And what that means is someone who can give testimony is someone who can basically say, I was there, I saw this, I have been there, done that. And so what the Hebrew writer is saying here is, if you want to learn how to lay aside the sin in our lives, that's what we talked about last week, and you can get that sermon online or on CD, but if you want to lay aside the sin in our life, if you want to run this race with endurance, if you don't want to be ensnared by all the distractions of this world, if you want to fix your eyes on Jesus, you're going to listen to the witnesses that have been there, done that. You're going to take note of those people who have gone on before you. We are surrounded by so great a cloud of witnesses who have been there, who can give testimony of how to run this race with endurance, of how to lay aside that sin and stay, keep focused on God and His promises. And it all starts with that very first word in Hebrews chapter 12, therefore. Because we have, therefore, we have this great cloud of, well, what great cloud of witnesses is he talking about? Well, it's in Hebrews chapter 11. And we know that chapter to be the great hall of faith where we have Old and New Testament characters alike. And he says, time would even fail me to tell you of all these other great men and women who have done wonderful things by faith. And he says, all these people were able to live their faith. They were able to do incredible things for the Lord's kingdoms. They are the Bible heroes. In fact, we teach them to our kids just like that. They're the Bible heroes. They're these great characters in the Bible who are able to by faith, do wonderful things. And so we say, we need to be more like Abraham. We need to be more like Joseph. We need to be more like David and Noah and Deborah and Gideon and all these other great men and women of faith. We need to be more like them because they're the Bible heroes. But to the Hebrew writer, these were real people. These were real people who were witnesses, who can give a testimony of what their life meant in service to God's kingdom. And he says, we're surrounded by so great a cloud of eyewitnesses who have been there, who have done that. They have been challenged the same ways we have been challenged. They question the same things we've questioned. They have committed the same sins, as we looked at last week with David, the same sins that we're still committing today, yet they were able to stay focused. And the simple answer is how, or the question is how and why, and the simple answer is, well, as you read through chapter 11, it was by faith. By faith they were able to do these wonderful things, by faith. And again, we have to ask ourselves, why is that sometimes just the simple answer to give? Because we don't want to explain how our faith can make us stronger and more focused. And so we just go to Hebrews 11, we say all you need is a little bit more faith. You want to not sin? Have some more faith. You want to run your race with endurance, your Christian walk? Have a little bit more faith. Fix your eyes on Jesus, just have a little bit more faith. As faith just grows on trees and you can walk out to your backyard, start pulling off faith and say, I need two pieces of faith today because it's going to be a little bit harder of a day. And so we just tell people, and I'm guilty of this as a gospel preacher, just have some more faith. The question is how? How do we just by faith do these things for God's kingdom? How did these people by faith do these wonderful things? Having faith is not something that just comes naturally. Having faith is not something that's just going to happen overnight. And then using our faith is a completely different ballgame. It's a completely different thing, especially using our faith when we're being oppressed or we're at war with the devil or we have conflict like any of these other Bible heroes that we read about. And so how do we do these incredible things? And it goes back, I've mentioned this morning at the Manners service, but in the middle of all these great men and women of faith, the Hebrew writer almost has to stop and remind us of something. He starts talking about Abel and how Enoch and Abraham and Noah and Sarah and how by faith they were able to do these incredible things. But he has to stop and tell us a little something. He tells us that they've stayed focused. How are these people able to become the great Bible heroes of faith that we talk about? He says they stayed focused on God's promises. read with me starting in verse 13 of Hebrews 11. After he talks about, like I said, Abel and Enoch and Noah and Abraham and Sarah, he says in verse 13, these all died in faith, not having received the promises, but having seen them afar off, were assured of them, embraced them, and confessed that they were strangers and pilgrims on the earth. For those who say such things declare plainly that they seek a homeland. And truly, if they had called to mind that country from which they had come out, they would have had opportunity to return. But now they desire a better, that is, a heavenly country. Therefore, God is not ashamed to be called their God, for He has prepared a city for them. He says, these people, these great heroes, they died not receiving the promises that were made to them. But one thing that they all had in common was that they had seen them afar off. They stayed focused on the promises. And not just focused, but they were, it says, assured of the promises that were afar off. How did they do these wonderful things? By faith. One thing is they fully believed in God's promises. They fully believed that the promises that God made to them or their forefathers, the same promises that were made to Abraham, and we teach our kids those promises of a great land, seed, and nation. And then along comes Isaac, the next in line, and he believes in those same promises. And so did Jacob, and so did the sons, and then so did so on and so forth. They believed in the promises. And then he says, it's not even those promises they were absolutely assured of. They're seeking a heavenly country. And now here you and I are. When we have so many different distractions pulling us in so many different ways, we have to simply just ask ourselves, am I assured of God's promises? God has promised us two things. Well, He's promised us a lot of things, but two main things I want us to think about. He has promised us that at some point, it could happen before this lesson is over, it can happen hundreds of years from now, but we know that whatever it is, the time is coming quickly. Promise number one, His Son is coming back. Jesus even said three times at the end of the book of Revelation, "Behold, I am coming quickly. Behold, I am coming quickly. Behold, I am coming quickly." That sounds like a promise to me. I'm coming back. Promise number two, when Jesus comes back, the goats and the sheep are going to be separated. That is, the sinners and the saints. However we want to put that, based on some of the parables of what Jesus taught us. When Jesus comes back, there's going to be a new heaven and a new earth. And as we read about in the book of Revelation, those who are not written in the book of life, who did not follow the word of God, they will be sent to the eternal lake of fire, while those who live the will of God will go get to spend eternity in heaven with our God. The question is, do we believe in those promises? See, God called Abraham out of an actual country, out of his father's country. And the Hebrew writer says there, if Abraham wanted to, he could have returned to the country that he came from. If Abraham at any point wanted to stop and say, you know what, I don't want the land that God promised me. I don't want the land of Canaan. I want to go back home to where I'm more comfortable. He says he could have done that. But yet he decided to push forward because he's seeking a better place. And here's the parallel. You and I have been called out of sin. Jesus says, if you want to enter into God's kingdom, you're going to follow me. And that means living a sinless life. Laying aside, as Hebrews chapter 12 tells us, laying aside that sin, changing your life. At any moment, we can go back. We can choose to go back if we want. At any moment, we can say, I want to stop living my life for Christ, and I want to go back to living the life I'm comfortable with. I want to go back to my life of sin. And here's where you get to the heart of why these great Bible characters have become our heroes. Because they chose not to go back. they chose to keep moving forward. They had absolute faith and assurance that the promises God made, they believed in them. And they didn't just believe in them, but they were seeking a heavenly country, it says, a better place. They knew that what they were leaving behind, all it could have been great. But they were seeking somewhere better. I want us to think where our focus is. As I said, there are so many things in our society that pull us in so many different directions. And I firmly believe that is the devil working. I believe the devil is real and he is out there and he is walking around like a roaring lion, seeking whom he may devour. And sometimes that means that he is trying to pull our focus off of where it needs to be. And I fully believe that when you look out at the society we live in, the devil is out there planting seeds of division. So we're focused more on protest and all these other different things in our society today instead of being focused on Jesus and getting to heaven. And we are more focused on proving an argument right, my argument right, and proving somebody else wrong than getting to heaven. And we are so distracted by everything else going on around us, by how wrong this person is, by how right I am, or whatever else it is. And we have completely lost our focus as God's people. You know what that sounds like to me? It sounds exactly like the children of Israel who wandered for 40 years because they didn't know what they wanted. They got to the promised land, but no, don't want to take it. They lost their focus. If we're going to be focused on Jesus, we have to take note of all these men and women, these great men and women of faith. If we're going to lay aside the sin that so easily ensnares us, if we're going to run our race with endurance and fix our eyes on Jesus, it's time to really fix our eyes on Him. And what that means is, fixing our eyes means that we're going to block out all the other distractions. At some point, we have to call it for what it is. That sometimes the things in this world are just distractions. And they pull us away from what truly matters. Have you ever taken a picture with your camera or your phone? And your camera focuses in on the wrong thing? Sometimes when I try to take a picture of the boys, they're moving around a little bit. And what ends up happening is the camera, they get that autofocus, you know, and instead of focusing in on the boys, since they're moving around, it tries to find something to grab onto and focus on, and so it will grab something in the background. So I take a picture, and I got a really nice picture of like the dog or a toy, and then the boys are just like a blur. Sometimes that's what our life is like. We know that our focus is Jesus, it's heaven, that's what it's supposed to be. But for some, our autofocus goes to everything else. And what becomes, what should be the sole focus becomes just the blur. When we can focus our eyes on Jesus, they're not on the world. When we're focused on God and His promises, just as the Hebrew writer says those people were, then they're not focused on everything else. Almost like a horse needing the blinders. Those horses wear blinders so that they can focus on one thing, and that's straight ahead. So that their focus doesn't get caught by something else or someone else that is off to their side. And so the Hebrew writer says that's why we need to lay aside the sin that so easily entangles us, because sin pulls our focus somewhere where it shouldn't be. That when we're distracted by the sins and temptations of this world, that means it's pulling us in a direction we don't want to go. And I can't tell you how many people I've talked to that says, I'm being pulled in this direction and I don't want to go this direction. I just don't know how to get back on the right track. We know that sin is wrong. We know that temptations lead us down a path we don't want to go, but we just don't know how to get off because we're so distracted by everything around us. And sometimes we just need to take a step back, reset our minds, and refocus on Jesus. That's what I love about our modern phones. Now, you used to see people have to do this with cameras. Some of you know how to do that. I don't. Our cameras are really good at just refocusing for us. But sometimes we need to not let the world tell us where we need our focus to be. And we got to learn to take a step back and just take the time to refocus our eyes on Jesus. Sometimes that means we need to reprioritize what's important in life. Sometimes it's not even sin and temptation that lead us down a path we're not wanting to go. Sometimes our priorities are just not where they need to be. Sometimes we need to reprioritize what we're teaching our kids as most important. Sometimes we need to teach them that being at services, not that being at services is the cure-all, that's not the point of what I'm trying to say. But being around God's people and being around God's Word, part of that is being at services or Bible class. It's important because this is a time where we just take a moment and refocus. We take a break from school, we take a break from sports, we take a break from friends. And we just get to be in God's presence with God's people and God's Word. And Satan wants our priorities to be on everything but God. But when we can focus our eyes on Jesus, it starts blocking out the distractions. Sometimes it means focusing our eyes means that we need to become active in God's kingdom. Go back to that story of Arnold Palmer. The minute he lost his focus was the minute he stopped playing golf and he went to go talk to a friend. And if you've ever played a sport, have you ever been in one of those moments where your shot decides the game? Have you ever watched a sport? The most intense, and I'll joke about it with some people I watch sports with, the most intense moments for me are when the kicker's about to kick a game-winning field goal. I think that's more intense than the last second three-point shot to win in March. I think it's more intense than a shootout in hockey or soccer. That field goal, you know how much pressure is there? But you know what you could see in that kicker's eyes? He's normally the scrawniest person on the team. No one probably knows his name. They probably forget he's there. But in that moment, there is so much focus. Because he has one goal, and that is get that football through the uprights. And boy, when he misses, he's everyone's least favorite player. You'll know his name now. Kickers have gotten death threats just for missing a game-winning field goal. But you know what happens when he makes it? He becomes the hero. Can't you liken that to Hebrews 11? Do you know why there are heroes? Because they made it. Because in the most intense moments of their lives and in God's kingdom, they were active. They did something. They didn't sit on the sidelines and wait for everyone else to do the work. No, it was by faith they were able to do these extraordinary things. Because they were focused on God's promises. And then, yes, I'm sure some of them had the mindset, even if I were to die at this moment, I believe in God's promises. So that's why they were able to go into war and build arks and lead people through huge bodies of water on dry land. That's why they were able to do these wonderful things, because when they fixed their eyes on God's promises, when they were focused on God's promises, they became active in working for His kingdom. I am guilty of giving 110% in about 50 different areas of my life. But I am also guilty of that 110% in all those areas of my life taking away from my 110% in God's kingdom. And I can't tell you how many people I've talked to that just assumes the preacher, man, they're always active. They're always 100%. This is their job. But it's just as easy for me and for our elders and our deacons and whoever else to be so focused on and active in so many different areas in life where we forget that really our main goal is Jesus. Sometimes we're focused on selling our products. We're focused on good grades. We're focused on homework or making more money, longer hours at work. Sometimes those things pull us away from our families. Sometimes it pulls us away from church. Sometimes we might make every single service, and yet our focus is still on kids or ball games, school projects, or any other activities that we have going on in life. And again, are any of those things bad? Absolutely not. But what happens is sometimes those things creep into my life, and I find myself giving 110% everywhere else except for God's kingdom. If we're going to consider the men and women that have gone on before us, we need to ask ourselves, what am I truly focused on? What have I taken my eyes off of? All these great men and women of faith in Hebrews 11, they used their faith to be completely active in the Lord's kingdom. Did they have secular lives outside of working for God? Absolutely. I'm sure they had friends and families. They had businesses. They had jobs. Paul was a tent maker. But you better believe his life, as he says in the book of Philippians, to live is Christ. That in the middle of all these other things he had going on, he never lost his one true focus, and that was to live is Christ. Because when he died, that's when he would gain everything. His eyes were on heaven. He pressed on towards the call of the upward call of God in Christ Jesus. The prize of the upward call in God in Christ Jesus. Which takes us to our last and final point. Focused eyes, they keep us moving forward. We have to remember that when we're focused on Jesus, that means we're moving forward to where He is. He is sitting at the right hand of the throne of God. And if that's where we want to be and our eyes are focused there, then everything in our life is going to fall in place to make it there. And you look at, again, what the Hebrew writer says, if they wanted to go back to their old country, they could have gone, but yet they desired a heavenly country. They desired something better, so they kept moving forward. Paul wanted that prize of the upward call of God in Christ Jesus. Hebrew writer tells us to lay aside every weight and run with endurance, looking unto Jesus. I love road trips, but I hate going on road trips and getting detoured. I'm the kind of person that when I get behind the wheel of a car, I want to get there. And what I try to do is, it's a game for me, and I think it is for a lot of men. We look at that estimated time, and we try to, you know, I'm going to beat that, right? Says I can make it in 2 hours, I'll make it an hour and a half. And what we start, I like seeing those numbers tick down. And I'm one of those people, when I'm on a road trip, I'm going for it. I've got my end goal in mind, I'm getting there. I don't like to stop. I will stop. You have to with kids. Kind of ruins that when kids are great, but they ruin road trips. But I think sometimes our lives, we lose focus on our final destination. That if as a Christian I were to punch in my final destination, it's going to be heaven. I'm sure all of us are here this morning because that's where we want our final destination to be. But instead of doing everything we can to get there, we're taking stop after stop, distraction after distraction. To where sometimes, eventually, what some people do is they forget exactly where they're headed. And instead of just heading straight for their destination and knowing, as Paul says, to live is Christ, that I'm going to press on, we say, I'm going to stop here first. We might get back on the road for a little while, but no, I'm going to stop there next. And we get distracted. If we're going to truly fix our eyes on Jesus, it's going to mean we're going to keep moving forward. It's going to mean that we're going to keep pressing on, even when things get difficult, when things get tough, even when God says, no one else is going to like you for this. I can't imagine some of those great men and women of faith. Noah, you're going to build an ark. No one's going to understand. They're going to think you're crazy. Moses, you're going to walk up to the most important man in this world, the most powerful man in this world, and tell him to let your people go. And when he says no, you're not going to take no for an answer. You're going to keep going. Gideon, you're going to go fight the army with thousands of men, and I'm only going to give you 300. Abraham, pack up everything, leave whatever you've known, get on the move. Their eyes were on God because they knew that God would deliver on His promises. Not only did they know that God would deliver on His promises, they believed in a heavenly country. More important than that, in verse 16, it says they desire a better heavenly country. And if that's what we desire, it means we're going to focus on that until we get it. We're going to focus on that heavenly country. We're going to keep moving forward. We're going to block out all the distractions. We're going to become active in God's kingdom, because by faith, you and I can do wonderful things. That the stories in Hebrews chapter 11 don't just have to be stories of these Bible heroes of faith. They can be real stories of witnesses, of testimonies that have gone on before us who have been there, done that. So that today we could say, just like Abraham, I could do it. Just like Isaac, I could do it. Just like all those men and women of faith, I can make it to my heavenly home, my heavenly country, because by faith, I will do it. But it starts with fixing our eyes back on Jesus. Maybe you're here this morning and you've taken your focus off. Maybe there's not even sin involved. It's just you have found yourself, like so many of us have at different points, putting our priorities and focus on so many different aspects except Jesus. Take this time to just take that step back like we talked about and renew that vision. But don't just renew it for yourself. Do it for your family. Teach your kids. Teach your spouse. Take that step back and just refocus that camera on Jesus. Maybe you're here this morning and you've never given your life to Jesus. He would say in the book of John that I am the way, the truth, and the life. No one comes to the Father except through me. If you want your focus to be on heaven, it is going to be by fixing your eyes on Jesus, the one and only way to heaven. And that means that we're going to die with Him in the waters of baptism and rise up in newness of life so that we can start walking with Him. That we no longer have to be slaves to sin. You talk about laying aside the sin that so easily entangles us, Jesus gives us the opportunity to do just that. Washing them away with the waters of baptism so you can rise up feeling free and all your burdens will be lifted. And then you can truly stay focused on Jesus. Do you need that this morning? If there's anything we can do to help, come forward as we stand and as we sing.